Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone. Your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Jump, jump, the Mac Dad'll make ya. Jump, jump, a Daddy Mac'll make ya. Jump, jump, a crisscross'll make ya. Jump, jump.
Start. Jump start. Set review. That's the episode today, everyone. How's it going? Welcome to the show. It's the Command Zone Podcast. You're either watching or listening, and I'm one of your hosts, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Quine. Is crisscross the ones that wear their clothes inside out or backwards?
I why are you looking at me? I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. You were probably like 4 years old. I think I was in like early high school. I have no idea. It was either inside out or backwards.
Yeah. Either way, you might not even know that song existed. I'm sure there's a lot of reviewership that does. Today, we are covering Jumpstart, the rest of the card. We spent last week's episode talking about the legendary creatures. And today, fortunately, not as many, but there are some new cards in the set as well, actually. 37 new cards.
Yeah, but some of those are the legendary creatures. So there's only like, I think there's 10 legendary creatures. So there's like 27.
Yeah.
We might be wrong about these numbers, but there's very few new cards in the set that aren't legendary creatures. However, there are enough, we thought, to make an episode about. So that's what we're talking about today, cards from Jumpstart that can go in your 99. Now, if you want to get your hands on any of these cards or any of the cards from M21, if you want to try and open that Grim Tutor,
ooh,
yeah, in the booster pack, you want to get those M21 booster boxes. Jumpstart has Craterhoof Behemoths and all kinds of cool stuff in it. If you want to get your hands on any of it, cardkingdom.com/command zone. That is the affiliate link you should use whenever you order Magic product singles, or if you're pre-ordering, whenever you're getting any of your Magic stuff, you know you're going to buy it anyway. If you just use that affiliate link when you do, you're simultaneously supporting this show, the podcast, this is the podcast, game nights, all of our content. You really are helping us out when you do that.
Yeah, and you know, we always talk about Ultra Pro on the show and how much Josh and I trust them, but did you know that outside of just doing the new art every single time a set comes out, they also just have blank white playmats?
Yeah.
They have colored playmats, right? You can really customize your play experience. In fact, if you're an artist, you can draw on the white playmats.
Oh,
I've
seen
people take them to conventions and get them drawn by all kinds of cool artists around the convention, or just get them signed. So Ultra Pro is the other sponsor of the show. It's the one that we, Josh and I, have trusted for going on 20 plus years now. I still have top loaders from when I was a kid. I love Ultra Pro, and of course putting them to brand new Eclipse sleeves when you get those cards and protecting them, super important. So you're also supporting the show if you go buy some Ultra Pro product at cardkingdom.com/command zone, your local game store, or any big box retailer.
And the final way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/command zone. Patreons are qualified for all kinds of perks, like hanging out with Jimmy and I on our Discord each and every day. Also, patrons get to see game nights a day before the general public, which means the most recent episode. Have you watched it yet? It's a really cool one. It's a good game.
Pretty good. It's pretty
good.
Yeah,
we won't give anything away here, but if you were a patron, you would have watched it earlier, even than you watched it, if you already have watched it, but you're not a patron.
Yeah.
That totally made sense. But also, another thing we do is we call out one lucky patron every single episode.
Ah, yes.
And this episode is dedicated to
Taylor Safford.
Taylor, You rock.
You do rock. Thank you, Taylor, for all your support. And everyone else, of course, as a patron. All right.
Yeah, let's get into it because we don't need another 90 minutes at review. I think we can get hopefully through this in like 40 minutes. No.
Yes. Okay, so jump start. We're going to jump right into it. And we're going to start off actually with a new cycle of lands.
Oh, right.
Very interesting. These are the common lands in a lot of the boosters, and the Jumpstart boosters have these. We're calling them the Thriving Lands, Choice Lands. I don't really know what to name them.
Whatever people end up calling them, that's what we'll call them. For now, Thriving whatever, because they all have the word Thriving and then another word. So the one we're going to use as an example is Thriving Bluff.
Yep.
This is the red one. But there's also Thriving Moor, Thriving Isle, Thriving Grove, and Thriving whatever the white one is. We didn't write it down. Hurry up.
Heath.
Thriving Heath.
Thriving like Windswept. Heath. Like Windswept.
Okay. So Thriving Bluff is the red one, but there's one for each color. Again, it's a land. Enters the battlefield tapped. As it enters the battlefield, though, you choose a color other than red in this case. If it's Heath, you'll choose a color other than white.
Right.
And then you can tap the Thriving whatever to add, in this case, red or one mana of the chosen color. So basically, all the Thriving lands, they always have one color, and then you choose the other color they're going to tap for.
That's interesting.
Pretty cool.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I can definitely see this being played in, I would say, 3+ color decks. But on the 3 side, it's even a little like, you might have better choices in just getting like a scry land, for instance. But I like the utility of this because, you know, you draw an opening hand, you have a Thriving Bluff, and you don't have any of your other third color or your second color.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Now you have it.
Yeah, because either one, like let's say you're playing in a teamer deck and you've got blue. So either one that you don't have, like if you have two red sources but no green in there, then you're going to choose green here. But vice versa, you could go the other way. So it does give you flexibility. That's definitely worth something. It's hard for me to tell exactly how much because these enter the battlefield tapped. That's it. There's no like, hey, reveal a swamp or have two lands or whatever else. No, they're just like guild gates. They enter the battlefield tapped. And I suppose guild gates kind of the comparison we should make here. These are definitely better than a guild gate, but by how much?
I would say you don't want to run these in a 2-color deck. That's for sure. That's just a no. 3-color is when you start to be interested in these because, again, like you run into those awkward situations where you draw your opening 7 but only have 2 of your 3 colors but a Thriving Land, so that helps you get there. So I'd say these are actually a decent amount better than a guild gate because a guild gate just doesn't do anything. This at least gives you the choice to be like, oh, cool, I have this blue spell in my hand. I gotta get another blue source. Draw Thriving Bluff or whatever it is. Well, great, I can actually get that.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, too. You can drive it or draw it after the fact, and it'll fix you. Because how many times have you been in a situation where you're like, I just need one more blue, and then you draw the dual land, but it's for the other 2 colors, and you're like, crap.
Correct.
This will, in that case, give you the color that you need.
Yeah. You can't fetch it out, though. It does come in the battlefield tapped. I would say if you are playing 4 colors, definitely 5 colors, 100%. It's a good way, I think, for instance, would you in your 5-color deck, would you throw all 5 of these in there?
I don't think so. It's too many tapped lands. I think you only have a spot for a certain amount. And I think I'd rather just have a tri-land because even when you're not like crimped on one color, you often want to be flexible of like the fact that a tri-land taps for all 3 colors. Because once you've chosen the color for this and it's on the battlefield, you can't be like, oh, I wish I would have said green. You know what I mean? Like it's too late.
Yeah.
So I think you can run one or two of these, but in general, they're probably only slightly more better, only slightly gooder than guild gates.
Yeah, they're slightly bester.
Yeah.
I think the only time I would really consider running these, outside of just like definitely put it in like a 4 or 5 color deck, is if you're playing black or a color that requires a lot of a specific color pit for casting costs. Because you do run it like, sometimes I have red decks, Necropotence, yeah. Or like I'll have a dragon deck with like 5 red pips and something, nothing that many. And you're like, how am I ever going to cast this?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think at most you may run one or two of these, but you're right, there's a lot of downside here. I'm not running all 5 and not using them very often.
Yeah, but I would swap them out for your guild gates if you just have that choice in a 3+ color deck.
Yeah. I think they're better than guild gate. Well, I guess they're not better than guild gates in 2-color decks, but they're equal to guild gates.
Yeah, unless you're playing a deck that wants to search out your gates and win that way.
Or I mean, they are technically just better because if you happen to steal somebody else's card or something and you needed the activated ability, like you can say a color outside your
triplets.
There you go. Okay. Send triplets and some decks like that where you do need color outside of your color identity, then these could do that, right?
Yeah, it's not making me build a send triplets deck, but it definitely made me think about it.
All right, let's begin with our set review. We are going to start with red because Jimmy put together the outline.
You bet I did.
You want to read the first card?
Yes, this is Immolating Gyre. 4 red, red for a sorcery. Immolating Gyre deals X damage to each creature and planeswalker you don't control, where X is the number of instant and sorcery cards in your graveyard. Okay, all right. So this is a one-sided red board wipe.
Yeah, it only hits your opponent's stuff, and it hits planeswalkers too, which Volcanic Vision is one, but that doesn't hit planeswalkers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's a pretty decent upside. However, you got to do some work to make this be good, because you have to have instants and sorceries in your graveyard. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you could potentially, like, 6 mana, do 2 damage to everything.
Ooh, and then you have a lot of better options in that regard. And there's also, you know, you can play Earthquakes as well. It does damage to everyone, but if you do X, you know, you can actually choose that number to be much larger.
Yeah.
You know, for me, this is, I think, a great step towards just giving red more board wipes. Because if you look at the board wipes for red, you're like limited to 3 or 4 until you get into blowing up lands.
Yeah.
it's like, true. Okay, no more.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of red decks do want a decent amount of instant and sorcery cards. And if your deck's built around that and already going to, I don't think you put a bunch of instants and sorceries into your deck and try and make them put, you know, make that deck put those
around
in the yard so you can make Immolating Gyre work. You just look at your deck and go, okay, if combined total, I have somewhere around 25 or 30 instants and sorceries or more, and a few of those effects are going to put those in the graveyard besides me just casting them.
Yeah.
Because let's talk about this. What number would you be happy with casting Immolating Gyre as far as the amount of damage that it does to creatures and planeswalkers?
Oof.
Are you happy if it's 3? I don't think you are.
No. 4, I think, 4? Is even not so much. Although, so, I think 4 is a very common toughness in Magic. I think 5 is maybe the when I'm starting to be
threshold.
Like, right. Yeah, because a lot of planeswalkers, too, I don't see, they usually are around right around that number if you're going to kill them.
So if you hit 5, you're at least, you're okay with what happens.
Yeah, I think
6
so.
Plus, and you're pretty happy, I think.
Oh, man. 6 plus is basically Blasphemous Act at that point.
Yeah,
I think.
It's like, killing almost everything. But, you know, some big stuff might survive. Yeah, so that's quite a few instants and sorceries in your graveyard, right? Like, that's not going to happen unless you do some work.
Yeah, the question is like, is Chandra's Ignition better? It saves one creature and does it to everything, but Immolating
Gyre... But you have to have a creature out.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I think this will find a lot of places in specific decks.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about some of those decks and how they work. The first card I put down is just Faithless Looting, because one, it's draw 2 cards and then discard 2 cards, but more importantly, it has flashback. And if you're going to play a deck with Immolating Gyre, I think it wants to be a deck that has a lot of flashback cards, because they're naturally going to be in the graveyard. Either you're looting and discarding, so most likely you're pairing this up with red and blue.
Yep. Also, Faithless Looting could put 3 instant land or sorceries in your graveyard, because it is an instant or sorcery. And then if you discarded 2, usually discarding lands, but
you know,
if you just happen to, it could really bump it up. And it's 1 mana, so it's conceivable you could do this on the same turn you Immolating Gyre. So decks that have Faithless Looting could look at Immolating Gyre as a possibility.
Yep.
Another card you put down is Underworld Breach.
Of course.
This is, we're going to talk about this a lot. We have been. It's pretty new still. It's 1 in a red for an enchantment. Each non-land card in your graveyard has escape. The escape cost is equal to the card's mana cost plus exile 3 other cards from your graveyard. So that means if you exile 3 cards from your graveyard, you can cast the card for its escape cost. Mm-hmm. So Underworld Breach isn't a card that goes with Immolating Gyre, except for the fact that if your deck has an Underworld Breach in it, there's a good chance that Immolating Gyre will be good in that deck because decks that have Underworld Breach are generally putting a lot of stuff in their graveyard.
Yeah, and not to mention, if you have a bunch, let's say you have 30 cards in your graveyard, you exile 3 of them, you recast Immolating Gyre from your graveyard.
That's a good point.
Boom, you do a lot more damage. You could actually do it twice in a single turn if you have enough mana, but
we're in
real, real Christmas land at that point. and now Underworld Breach also says at the beginning of your end step, sacrifice it, so you can't obviously keep it around forever.
Sorry, I forgot that part. The version I read was broken.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's broken anyway.
Someone at home is just like, wait, that's what it does?
Yeah, sorry. You sacrifice it at the end of turn. It's still broken.
The card that we probably mentioned the most outside of Underworld Breach is Riel the Everwise. It's a 1 blue red for a 0/3. It gets +1/+0 for each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard. So similar text to Immolating Gyre. And whenever you discard one or more cards for the first time each turn, draw that many cards. So this with Faithless Looting is really nuts. It doubles up the draw you have.
This tends to be a wheel deck too, so you're going to be dumping a lot of stuff in your graveyard, and that's the kind of deck that Immolating Gyre is going to be really, really good in, because a lot of times I think you're going to pay 6 and do, you know, 15 to everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Jori Anrune Diver.
Wait. Is it good? Because Blasphemous Act, you could pay 1 red mana and do that much.
But it hits your own creatures.
Yeah, that's
this
right.
Only hits opponent's creatures.
Okay.
And Planeswalkers, which I think it's better than Blasphemous Act. Well,
in certain scenarios?
In certain scenarios, because you still have to pay 6. That's a big difference than 1.
True. Man, Mike gets such good board wipes for six. Red gets this like conditional.
Hey, well, that's fine. White deserves it.
Yeah, okay, fine.
The next card we've got down is Jory Ann, Ruined Diver. It's one, a blue, and a red for a 2/3 legendary merfolk wizard. It says, whenever you cast your second spell each turn, draw a card. So this is a deck that tends to have a lot of like one, like brainstorm, ponder, that kind of stuff. And that's going to put a lot of spells in your yard. So Immolating Gyre.
And more importantly, you're drawing the cards back, so you're always refueling your hand.
Yep.
Niv-Mizzet, Perun, blue, red. Maybe play a Thriving Land in this deck. It's a legendary creature, Dragon Wizard 5/5. The spell can't be countered. It's flying, and whenever you draw a card, Niv-Mizzet does one damage to any target, and whenever a player casts an instant or sorcery, you draw a card. So this also tends to be a wheel deck, also one that just gets a lot of damage in over time.
Yeah, I think ultimately what you said is going to be true. Immolating Gyre can find a home in certain decks, but its usage is narrow. Yeah. Definitely it's not a go-in-every-red-deck type of card because your deck just has to be set up right for it. You can think of it sort of similar to a card that says, you know, the word zombies on it somewhere or something like that, right? That only goes in zombies deck.
Yeah, yeah.
The Immolating Gyre just only goes in instant and sorcery heavy decks. And also, not just that, they have to be putting stuff in the yard.
And throw it in the Mizzix deck, maybe. Cast it for two.
Disimage, that's probably a good one.
You can basically say blue-red, go to edhrec.com, look up any of their blue-red commanders, and that like probably 80% of them will follow this theme. Yeah, spells matter, yeah.
All right, let's talk about the next red card. This is a cool one. It's called Living Lightning. 3 and a red for a 3/2 elemental shaman. When Living Lightning dies, return target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard to your hand.
Ooh, interesting. I'm down for that. That is spell recursion that is targeted, right? I don't think Red's ever really seen this. We have Charmbreaker Devils, but that costs a lot of mana, and you have to wait for your upkeep to do it. This just needs to die. So let's see.
It's like Red gets an Archaeomancer, Mnemonic Wall type of effect, and those are both cards that see a lot of play. And, you know, almost like a Snapcaster Mage type of effect.
Yeah.
Better in some ways, worse in others. Obviously, enter the battlefield a little easier than when it dies. But there's hoops we can jump through here.
Yeah, let's talk about them.
Yeah, I think this will be able to, because the card goes to your hand, right? So Snapcaster has this thing where, yeah, you can cast out your graveyard, but after you do it, it exiles it.
Right.
This returns it to your hand, so you can get into loops where the card you're getting back is actually getting you the Living Lightning back.
Oh, so you can do it again.
Yeah, so like Death Denied is a good example of this. It's black and X for an instant, and it says return target creature cards from your graveyard to your hand.
Oh, okay.
Or X target creature cards.
Yep.
So you could get, you know, if X is equal to 3, you get Living Lightning plus a couple other things back, and then you recast Living Lightning, sack it, do this Death Denied thing again, you know, because it gets the Death Denied back when it dies, and then you can kind of just get into these loops where you're reoccurring certain creatures.
Seems like a really good card for like an eggs type deck, right? You're wanting to throw a ton of stuff into the yard, and you're going to find a way to bring it all back.
Here's one you used recently on Game Nights, Jimmy.
Verdant Rebirth. It's one in the green for an instant. Until end of turn, target creature gains. When this creature dies, return it to its owner's hand. And you also draw a card. So boom, cast Verdant Rebirth on your Living Lightning. You cycle it, so you draw a card from Verdant Rebirth, and then you sack Living Lightning. It's going to bounce back to your hand. It's also going to fetch an instant or sorcery, which could be Verdant Rebirth.
Yep, and you could just get into that loop where if you're somehow creating mana or just value, you know, drawing a card each time you do this could be worth it.
That infinite mana draws your whole deck here, right?
Yeah, exactly. Extra turn spells are just kind of good with Living Lightning because the ones that don't exile themselves.
Yes.
So, again, this is where you kind of get into situations where it can be better than Snapcaster Mage because it doesn't exile the thing. Mm-hmm. It brings it back to your hand. So, this is things we see with Archaeomancer and Mnemonic Wall, of course. So, let's imagine a scenario, and this is going to be quite a combo, but I think there are multiple ways to do this. You can use either, like, Gift of Mortality, of Immortality, or Lifeline.
Right.
Gift of Immortality is 2 and a white for an enchantment or an enchanted creature. When enchanted creature dies, return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control, and then return Gift of Immortality to the battlefield, attach that creature at the beginning of the next end step. Lifeline does a similar thing.
It's actually
quite different, but it'll have the same effect in this case. So it's 5 mana for an artifact. Whenever a creature is put into a graveyard and a creature is in play, return that creature from your graveyard to play at the end of the turn, to the battlefield at the end of the turn. So what you could do is like have an extra turn spell in your graveyard, sack the Living Lightning, get it back. And Gift of Immortality or Lifeline is going to return Living Lightning to the battlefield.
Right.
You've cast the extra turn spell, and now next turn you just do that again, and that's sort of an infinite turns type of deal.
In red, interestingly enough.
There's also these cards. Well, you want to read this one?
Second Sunrise. I love this card. One white for an instant. Each player returns to play all artifact, creature, enchantment, and land cards that are put there into his or her graveyard from play this turn. So this is like the eggs kind of combo you're going for now, right?
Right, exactly. So you sack all your stuff, including Living Lightning. It gets your Second Sunrise back, or maybe it's already in your hand. Then you cast your Second Sunrise. All that stuff comes back, including Living Lightning, which you can sack to get back the Second Sunrise and do that again.
Okay, yeah. And with ETB effects, is obviously very powerful. If you're using a altar to sack, you're going to get a lot of mana when you sack all your stuff. If you have a card like Greater Gargadon, you can get a lot of cards in the graveyard that way by sacking it.
Yeah, Faith's Reward is another version of Second Sunrise. There are a few things that do that.
Yeah.
Living Death is another card that, it's going to make you sacrifice, right? So Living Death, three black for a sorcery. All players exile all creature cards from their graveyards, then sacrifices all creatures they control, then puts all cards they exile this way onto the battlefield. So if Living Lightning's out and you cast Living Death, you'll get all your creatures from your graveyard onto the battlefield. Living Lightning will be forced to be sacked, and you can just get the Living Death back into your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're sitting there with Living Death in your hand, which is going to bring back the Living Lightning the next time you cast it, because it's now in your graveyard.
Everything's living.
Yeah, and then you can just kind of keep doing that, right?
Yeah.
So...
You know what I realize is interesting? Normally, if you want, let's say you have an Archaeomancer and a counterspell in your graveyard. Everyone knows, Josh has an Archaeomancer and a counterspell, he can get it back. But you have to have like instant speed flash,
right?
To make it really effective. The cool thing about Living Lightning is you can sack it instant speed. You don't need another card like Vedalken Orrery out there to make it happen.
There's a lot of sack outlet, but
there's plenty of those. And
they're even on lands, right?
Yeah. And that's another way to use this like a instant speed type thing. Kind of cool.
And finally, I think the thing that'll sort of make all of this really work is if you're gaining mana when you're doing this stuff. So stuff like Pitiless Plunderer, which is 3 and a black. Whenever another creature you control dies, you create a treasure token. Phyrexian Altar, obviously, or Ashen's Altar you mentioned before. When you're sacking, you're making mana.
Mm-hmm.
And then Murph pointed this card out to me. It's called Carnival of Souls. It's 1 and a black for an enchantment. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield... under anybody's control, you lose 1 life and add black to your mana pool. Dangerous a little bit, but on the turn you're kind of going to go off, you might be able to make this happen because Living Lightning and other creatures are likely to be entering and leaving, like especially if you're doing that Second Sunrise thing.
Yeah, or even if you're just taking a bunch of extra turns, right? I mean, you're fine if you lose 10 life, but you take 10 extra turns in a row.
Yeah, exactly. It might just make you able to cast enough stuff to really make that engine work.
Yeah, but this is cool. I'm just glad that red has an effect like this finally. It's cool. I'm glad it's there, and keep it coming, Wizards.
I think it's at the right power level, too. You have to jump through some hoops. It just doesn't do the thing, right?
It's also a 4-mana card, which makes it pretty high CMC these days.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the next red card.
Spiteful Prankster, 2 and a red. It's a creature devil, 3/2. As long as it's your turn, Spiteful Prankster has first strike. And whenever another creature dies, Spiteful Prankster deals 1 damage to target player or planeswalker. Ah.
Whenever another creature dies, too, that's
anybody's creature. Yeah. Hey, look at this. You know this pairs well with that we loved from last episode? Xur'zoth, Chaos Rider!
Yeah, woo! Devil Tribal, and it's also a devil.
Yeah, it's 2 and a red for a 2/3. Whenever an opponent draws their first card each turn, if it's not their turn, you create a 1/1 red devil creature token that when it dies, it deals 1 damage to any target. And whenever one or more devils you control, including the Spiteful Prankster, which is going to have first strike on your turn, whenever one or more devils you control attacks one or more players, you and that player draws a card and discards a card at random. So that's kind of fun. And when your devils die now, they deal 2 damage because of the Spiteful Prankster.
Yeah, basically. Well, the devils can deal it to any target. Spiteful Prankster is only to player or planeswalker. This is kind of aristocratsy, but it's on the red side. We're used to seeing the aristocratsy stuff on the black side, right?
Yeah, there's no life gain, but there's definitely a lot of damage dealt.
Yeah, definitely a lot of ways to make, like, let's say you were doing some of that stuff with Living Lightning, you know, just recurring it over and over and over. Well, if you have Spiteful Prankster out, that turns into a win because that turns all the dying into damage. You put down Chainer, Nightmare Adept, which is another cool one. 2 black and a red, 4 mana for a 3/2 legendary human minion. It says, discard a card. You may cast a creature card from your graveyard this turn. Activate this ability only once each turn. But also, whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, if you didn't cast it from your hand, it gains haste until end of turn.
Ooh.
So this is a way to just, your reoccurring creatures, sacking them on purpose. This is kind of a Rakdos Aristocrat style deck.
Yeah, and a lot of these cards also apply to Living Lightning. Garna the Blood Flame, right? This is a flash creature. When it enters the battlefield, return to your hand all creature cards in your graveyard that were put there from anywhere this turn. So that includes a Living Lightning. Yeah, there's just ways, right? Like, you're going to want to sack a bunch of things and get them back. It's giving red a little bit more of a value engine and not saying, like, every time something dies, draw a card or something nuts, but it's just do a little damage. And I think that's, you know, it doesn't, like, how much damage you have to deal to equal a card in Magic?
I don't know what it is in... Yeah, I have no idea what it is in Commander.
But we're kind of getting there.
Yeah. Pitiless Plunderer, again, would be good in a deck like this because obviously things are dying. We talk about... Whenever we talk about red now, we're going to talk about Torbran and Fiery Emancipation. Those are just increased damage. Torbran adds 2 to any red source that's dealing damage for you, and Fiery Emancipation triples the damage from any source you control.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, here's a... Here's a Magical Christmas Land combo.
We are talking about Magic cards.
It doesn't even win you the game, but I just thought it'd be funny.
Okay.
So you get Chandra's Incinerator out, which is 5 and a red, but it costs you X less to cast, where X is the amount of non-combat damage dealt to your opponents this turn.
Okay.
It's a 6-6 with trample. That doesn't matter. It says, whenever a source you control deals non-combat damage to an opponent, Chandra's Incinerator deals that much damage to target creature or planeswalker that player controls.
Oh.
So a creature dying... will deal 1 damage to a player, which Chandra's Incinerator will say, that's non-combat damage. I'm going to do 1 damage to a creature or planeswalker. So if you can give Chandra's Incinerator Death Touch.
Oh, with Spiteful Prankster out, you just need to kill one thing.
Creature, and then Chandra's Incinerator goes, deal 1 damage to that. That's Death Touch. It dies. Spiteful Prankster, deal 1 damage to opponent. Chandra's Incinerator, that's non-combat damage. I'll hit that creature.
Yeah.
That kills it.
Okay.
There you go. Magical Christmas Land, and all it does is kill all the creatures and do some damage to your opponents, but it still seems like it would be fun.
Yeah. We've done this before with your Goblin Sharpshooter and Death Touch type things.
A lot easier to pull off with the Goblin Sharpshooter.
You know, what if your whole deck was that? What if?
What
you
if?
Never know.
What if?
All right. So how did red fare here, Josh? I think it did pretty well. Living Lightning is very good.
Yeah, I like Living Lightning a lot.
Immolating Gyre is just another red board wipe, and it's a little more conditional. It's not the worst, though.
Yeah. I think, they did fine. Living Lightning is pretty cool, actually. So, and there's not a lot of cards. It's not like a full set, right?
Yeah.
So I think one really solid card...
per color.
Is, and I think we do have that, by the way. Spoiler alert. I'd give them like a B. B plus, maybe.
Keeping in theme with the theme, doing damage, lots of it. Good job, red.
All right, let's move on to white here, the much beleaguered.
White starts with Blessed Sanctuary. Okay,
is it blessed or blessed?
I don't know.
It's either Blessed Sanctuary or Blessed Sanctuary.
Let us know in the comments below. If you've been looking for the chance to comment, now is your chance.
It's cool art.
Yeah, it's really cool. Cute. I tried to say cute and cool. A lot of unicorns. All right. 3 white for an enchantment. Prevent all non-combat damage that would be dealt to you and creatures you control. Whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, create a 2/2 white unicorn creature token. All right. Unicorn tribal, as well as just creating a lot of tokens in a flicker deck of types as well.
Yeah. Emil the Blessed is, or Blessed. I'm not sure.
Oh, there we go. Is it Blessed Sanctuary or Emil the Blessed or Blessed Sanctuary Emil the Blessed?
Either way, that's the Unicorn Tribal Commander right now, so pumps your unicorns.
Yeah.
You
pay 3 to exile another target creature, and then it returns to the battlefield under control, and then when it comes in, you can pay more mana. One thing we didn't mention last time, and this is a card that you brought to my attention on game nights, is Workhorse Goes Infinite with Emil. It's a horse and a unicorn.
Right, because it's a 6 mana 0/0, but it comes into play with 4 1/1 counters on it. But you can remove a 1/1 counter from it to add a colorless mana to your mana pool. So if you did that 3 times, then you can activate Emil, blink the workhorse, and it'll come back with 4.
Yep.
You can't do it 4 times because then it would die.
All you have to do is add an extra counter to it, though, with Emil, up to 5, and now you go 4, blink, and now you have infinite mana. So you basically just have to have one.
If you had hardened scales or something, you can do it.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, sorry, that was a side tangent. So the part I actually like about Blessed Sanctuary, I mean, it's cool to make unicorn tokens.
Yes.
But a 5 mana spell that makes you a 2/2 every time you cast a creature is not that great. We have cards
like that. It's
definitely
not turning the game around like a board wipe would, right?
But prevent all non-combat damage that would be dealt to you and creatures you control is pretty cool, and you can do some interesting things. So Command the Dreadhorde is a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
It's 4 black for a sorcery. Choose any number of target creatures and or planeswalker cards in graveyards, all graveyards. Command the Dreadhorde deals damage to you equal to the total converted mana cost of those cards, and then you put them onto the battlefield under your control. So
this triggers both parts of Blessed Sanctuary.
So you cannot be dealt non-combat damage. It's all prevented. So you could just choose all creatures in all graveyards, put them onto the battlefield. You'll take no damage.
And you get a bunch of 2/2s for all the creatures that entered.
Yeah. So that's like...
And planeswalkers,
if
too.
If you have Command the Dreadhorde in your deck, I would think about Blessed Sanctuary, because if you could ever pull that off, you're probably going to win. That's insanity.
Yeah, normally with Command the Dreadhorde, you're like, I'll take 2 targets, maybe 3, and take like 16 damage. But in this case, yeah, just choose everything. That's actually really exciting.
You get planeswalkers with it, too, so yeah, yeah. Pretty cool. Also, just like earthquake spells that just deal damage to everybody, you prevent all non-combat damage to yourself and creatures you control. Mm-hmm. So you go earthquake for 10, kills everybody's creatures, hits them for 10, nothing, none, like that's one-sided,
yeah.
Right?
Actually, I really like the text prevent all non-combat damage shall be dealt to, because we're always harping on how no one's really swinging in our meta.
Yeah.
So in this case, it's like Rurikthar, sorry, buddy.
Nekusar,
sorry.
Yeah, so much stuff is just stopped by that text. So if you can at all play into it a little bit, I think it's probably worth including, and especially if you've got enough creatures that you're going to get some tokens. Like the rest of it, I don't think is enough by itself,
yeah,
but it all adds in as added gravy if it's going along with the strategy you like. So
there might be a deck archetype being built here with this idea of preventing non-combat damage and having a lot of spells that deal combat damage in a meta that's not combat heavy.
Pyrohemia and Pestilence are both cards. Also, they are enchantments that you can pay either a red for Pyrohemia or a black for Pestilence, and that converts to 1 damage to each creature and each player. But these both enchantments have to be sacrificed if there are ever no creatures on the battlefield. Mm-hmm. But because your creatures won't take damage from them, they're going to just stick around. So that can be really powerful.
That's exciting. All right, the next white card we're talking about is Brightmare. 2 and a white for a creature unicorn. It's a 2/3. When it enters the battlefield, tap up to 1 target creature. You gain life equal to that creature's power. Okay, so it's a great flicker target. It's going to gain you a lot of life if you have infinite mana with something like a meal. It's kind of like Soul Warden a little bit, but in this case, it also taps stuff down. I think this is an interesting uncommon for white. It gives the white a little flexibility. There's not really much else I have to say about it other than that.
I mean, if you have infinite mana with a meal, it can always tap itself when it comes in, so it'll gain you infinite life.
Yeah.
Yay. How is Brightmare not a name that's been used in Magic before?
Yeah, right? There's all kinds of mares out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Brightmare, yeah, interesting.
Go ahead.
Supply Runners, 4 and a white for a 2/2. When it enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on each other creature you control. It's a very casual effect. We've seen this a bunch of times. Johnny Steadfast, Collective Effort, Micaeus the Lunarch. If you're in a +1/+1 counters matters deck, go nuts. Einok Bondkin, Abzan Falconer, Battle Priest, those all give lord type effects to creatures with plus
Outlast
counters.
Lords.
Yeah, the Outlast Lords. You're going to want to play tokens with this deck, so you have Secure the Wastes, Elite Scale Guard, the most busted limited thing of all time.
Yeah, it makes it so that you tap down their creatures when you attack.
Yeah, I think this is like good for a mono-white aggro deck, and that seems like another thing, right, again, that might be something that people like to play here.
Yeah,
and if you're playing mono-white aggro, then play Ravnica at War, because this card will house a Josh Lee Kwai deck.
Oh, yeah. So it's 3 and a white for a sorcery. Exile all multicolored permanents. Yeah. Yeah. I've never seen anyone cast it, but it would definitely destroy me if I did. One more card, and it's fairly simple, I just wanted to mention, was Release the Dogs. It's 3 and a white for a sorcery. It says, create 4/1/1 white dog creature tokens. I think this is actually a pretty good rate. 4 mana for 4 bodies.
Yeah.
Think about Hoardling Outburst, which is the red version. Three mana for three bodies.
And it's one red, hard to cast.
Now, goblins are a better, quote-unquote, tribe, more supported tribe than dogs. However, just that amount of bodies for that amount of mana, I think, is actually something that is useful, and we'll probably see this card see a little bit of play.
Count it. Okay. How did white fare? It has cards that we want to talk about, but nothing that fixes the problems that we're talking about.
That's true. There's no cards that fix the problems in white, but I do think that Blessed Sanctuary is quite a good card.
Yeah, and again, I would love to know if people are building this kind of deck, because maybe this is something there, right? This could be another version of your Stop Hitting Yourself deck that's finally coming to play, which means you were like 3 years advanced of the head of the curve. Josh Lee Kwai, get designing.
All right, we have green, we have black, and we have, is that it?
Blue.
Still up, so... Before we get into it, we've got to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors. That was smooth, wasn't it?
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today. The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, I'm Nolan Sykes, a host of Past Gas, the number one automotive podcast in the world. Every week, my co-hosts, James Pumphrey, Joe Weber, and I bring you some of our favorite stories from the hallowed halls of car history. From the amazing to the weird to the utterly unforgettable moments, we cover it all. Join us as we take a look at the wild stories and larger-than-life characters behind legendary cars and car makers. So if you love cars or just like a good story, check out Past Gas by Donut Media, the number one automotive podcast in the world.
All right, we are back, and we're talking about the brand new cards from Jump, Jumpstart. And we're moving on to green. We have blue and black as well. So far, you know, cards have been interesting. They're nothing groundbreaking, but definitely pushing things in certain directions. So let's see where green takes us. First
this
up,
next card's good.
Yeah, jeez. It's Allosaurus Shepherd. It's a green mana for a 1/1 elf shaman. It can't be countered. And it says, green spells you control can't be countered.
Not just creatures,
green spells. Four green until end of turn. Each elf creature you control has base power and toughness 5/5 and becomes a dinosaur in addition to its other types.
So it has an activated ability for 6 mana that just turns all your stuff into 5/5 dinosaurs.
Pretty cool. Okay, this is actually very powerful, right?
Yeah, I think this is a really good card. We're going to see this a lot.
I mean, in terms of just like, we are saying like one drops are very important these days in Commander. This is another great one drop, especially in a mono green stompy deck, even in a two color deck with a lot of multicolored cards, because sometimes you're casting green spells to just win the game. Crater Hoof Behemoth, or Green Sun Zenith type, right?
Yep, I think probably you won't run this out on turn one very often because it does protect your turn so well.
Right.
So probably you're going to hold it in hand. And the fact that it's one mana is huge because you don't want the, I'm using this to protect my turn spell to cost a lot of mana, because then you're like, but I have to use half my turn to cast this spell. This one's like, well, one mana, turn, pretty well protected. I mean,
it also can't be countered itself. That's actually really important.
There's the most popular episode of Game Nights with Melissa DeTora, she uses Dragonlord Dromoka, basically because she knows that I have a bunch of instant speed stuff, and she does a thing where she uses Dragonlord Dromoka to protect her turn in this way. That is a high CMC card. This is a one mana card that does, and she ends up winning the game off the back of it. Sorry, spoiler alert if you haven't seen that episode.
old episode, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, Melissa DeTora, like one of the great Magic players ever, and definitely outplayed me there for sure. No surprise. But I like the fact that this card will do a similar thing, not the exact same thing, but for only one mana.
Yeah, not to mention, right, if you're just playing like an Elf Ball deck, you're going to want to have a way to make Ahri creatures very scary. Even if you're playing a Dinosaur deck, now you can add a little bit more Mana Dorks in there because, again, like casting a Zakama or a Gashoth, everyone wants to counter that spell, right?
Yeah,
so
true.
This is a fun way to really get a lot of value out of that.
And sorry, I misspoke earlier. It only turns each of your elves
right
into 5/5 dinosaurs.
Yeah, yeah.
Not
so,
all your creatures.
So if you have a bunch of elves lying around, or if you're just doing elf mana ramp, even like a Selvala deck would love this too, because now you're, you know, for 6 mana, you turn creatures huge, and you're going to have a lot of mana in that deck. Maybe that's how you're swinging out. I don't know. There's better ways to win with Selvala, that's for sure.
So Gashoth, Sun's Avatar, is a deck we have written down that might want something like this. Zakama, Primal Calamity, Galta, Primal Hunger. These are just big dinosaur decks. I think giving this card flash is really, really powerful because it can become a counterspell itself then. So if they try to counter one of your green spells, you can flash out Allosaurus Shepherd with like Yeva, Winding Canyons, Leyline, Vidalcan Orrery, Alchemist Refuge. You know the cards that we always talk about.
Yep.
Really good because now they're down a card.
Yeah, that's
from
rough.
Doing that.
That
and
is
you're still
rough.
Protected. Yeah.
Yeah, I like this. I think this card is going to see a lot of play. And because we can just talk about dinosaurs all day, I'm going to do that thing again where I just talk about some cool dinos that we've had recently. You may not have known there were dinos. This one's pretty easy. Quartzwood Crasher, 2 red, red, green. It's trample. Whenever one or more creatures you control with trample deal combat damage to a player, create an XX green dinosaur beast creature token with trample where X is the amount of damage that those creatures dealt to that player. That's cool. You get a lot of other dinosaurs. Karuga the Macro Sage. It's a companion card. It says when it enters the battlefield, you draw a card for each other permanent you control, CMC 3 or greater. Not great with Allosaurus Shepherd, but it is a dinosaur because it's a dinosaur hippo. And then Aluna, Apex of Wishes. It has Mutate. You play it in a teamer deck. When this creature mutates, exile cards from the top of your library until you exile a non-land permanent, and you put that card on the battlefield or into your hand.
All right.
Just, they're all dinosaurs. That's what I wanted to talk about.
Any excuse to talk about dinosaurs?
Who knew Karuga was a dinosaur?
Yeah,
it looks like a hippo.
Yeah, it's true. I didn't know it was a dinosaur.
Yeah.
All right, the next green card is
Towering Titan. Titan. 4 green for a 0/0 creature titan. Don't worry, it's going to get towering soon.
Creature giant,
yeah. Creature dinosaur giant, not dinosaur. Towering Titan enters the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters on it, where X is the total toughness of other creatures you control, and you can sacrifice a creature with Defender. All creatures gain trample until end of turn. All creatures. This is kind of like Kenrith. You can give every creature on the battlefield something by doing this.
Yeah, this is obviously for those big butts decks. Yep. So Doran, the Siege Tower, is a big one. Arcades, the Strategist. Because again, Towering Titan wants you to have creatures with Defender.
Mm-hmm.
But also just big butts.
I like putting this in the Thantis, the Warweaver deck, where you just play a bunch of Defender cards and force everyone to attack. Because it says all creatures attack each able if able. That's
and your defenders don't have to attack because they're not able, and then you can just...
When you do need to swing in, the Towering Titan is going to help you get there.
You put down one of my favorite cards here, Meekstone, which is just good in any deck that's high toughness, low power.
You monster.
Creatures with power 3 or greater don't untap during their controller's untap steps. Unfortunately, Towering Titan gets power and toughness boost, though, so it might not untap.
Yeah. Huatli, the Sun's Heart, is a Planeswalker enchantment version of the Duran effect of each creature you control assigns combat damage equal to its toughness rather than its power.
And then Assault Formation is an enchantment version of that. Each creature you control assigns combat damage equal to its toughness rather than its power. And it also says, allows your defenders to attack and then pumps toughness. So Assault Formation, one of the best cards in those decks.
Yeah, the Defender deck, it's definitely something that came much more prominent like 2 or 3 years ago when Arcades came out. And it's just been around for a while. So I think if you have the space for it, Towering Titan's going to be a good fit in those types of decks.
All right, the last green card we're going to talk about is Branching Evolution. It's 2 and a green for an enchantment. If one or more +1/+1 counters would be put on a creature you control, twice that many +1/+1 counters are put on that creature instead.
Okay.
So it's just half of Doubling Season.
Yeah, it's Corpse Jack Menace on an enchantment.
There you go.
I think the Doubling Season comparisons aren't great because Doubling Season can double your Planeswalker counters, and I think that's really where things get super de-duper busted. But Branching Evolution costs 3 mana. It's a great enchantment for this effect, and again, the +1/+1 matters deck, there's obviously more and more ways to go infinite with every single time you see cards like this exist. So this is just another nod in that direction.
+1/+1 counters, pretty established as far as an archetype. So a lot of these cards you'll know. Peer, Imaginative Rascal.
Yep.
That also, doubles the counters?
Yeah.
Oh, no, +1. Gives +1 counters. So there's two ways to give additional counters, right? There's ones that say, if you're going to put that many, put twice that many.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one that says, if you're going to put that many, +1.
Yep.
Peer's a +1. Winding Constrictor, also +1.
Primal Vigor, though.
That's a doubler.
But it is for everyone at the table.
So, if, yeah, don't let them put +1 counters on their own. Hardened Scales is a +1.
Yes.
Which would be +2 with Branching Evolution out, so it still works really well.
Right, it's the exact same effect, basically.
Skullbriar, we've talked about a lot recently because, well, it says counters remain on it as it moves to any zone other than a player's hand or library, and then whenever it enters the battle, or sorry, whenever it deals combat damage to a player, you put a 1-1 counter on it. So if you can dump a bunch of counters on it, they're going to stay as it moves from graveyard to exile or whatever.
Doubling it up. Yeah, yeah, so it's just going to get bigger and bigger, so that's a fun way of doing it. This next, so how did green fare?
So green, I think, Allosaurus Shepherd is a very, very good card. It's probably the single best card we've talked about so far.
It's really similar to that, like, Veil of Night. Is that what it was?
Yeah,
Veil of Autumn, Summer? Veil of a Season. It's a green instant that basically says protect your turn if you're trying to combo off this turn. So I could see Allosaurus Shepherd being a CDH card for that reason.
And it's very efficient. It's one mana. I think it just goes in a lot of decks because a lot of times those decks are, like, trying to dodge, you know, a couple of counter spells to close out the game. And so, you know, for one mana to be able to do that.
I mean, look what Prowling Serpipore did to me.
Yeah, exactly. Those cards are very important in green decks. So I think green did pretty well here. I'd give him like a B+.
Okay, yeah.
All right.
A B plus.
All right, agree plus?
I agree.
Okay.
All right, moving on to blue. We only have two cards to talk about here. The first is Scholar of the Lost Trove.
It's a pretty good one, though.
Yeah, it is. 5BB for a 5/5, so it better be powerful. Creature Sphinx with flying. When this creature enters the battlefield, you may cast target instant, sorcery, or artifact card from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. If an instant or sorcery cast this way we put into your graveyard this turn, exile it instead. It doesn't say that for the artifact. I don't know why they didn't template it. It's like if the artifact leaves your whatever, it also gets exiled. But it's only instants to sorceries. You can cast artifacts with this?
And then do the KCI stuff where you sack it and...
Yeah. Also, you can cast sorceries. This is the first time, I believe, a card lets you cast a sorcery for free from your graveyard.
There's a few like other sorceries that do it, but yeah, I can't think
of ETB. In terms of like a creature ETB,
yeah,
which means you can flicker it, doing a bunch.
I think like Dark Goblin Dark Dwellers, but it's CMC limited, so yeah, there's not very many.
This is just any instant sorcery or artifact. Now, 7 mana, big, tall order, but I mean, you can get a lot of stuff out of this.
Yeah, this is a very powerful card, and we found... What's the blue card printed recently?
That, Agent of Treacheries.
Yes, we found out that like if you put a very powerful effect and try and balance it by making it cost 7 mana, that's not good
enough. It's not good enough, yeah.
Yeah, people will get around that and it'll be just fine. Like, they won't have any trouble getting that thing out onto the battlefield. Feels like this should have been a cast trigger.
Yeah, that sounds right, too.
Because the way to abuse it, and it's going to be not that difficult, is to obviously blink it and put an extra turn spell in your graveyard, right? And then most of those are sorceries.
Yep.
So, yeah, boring. But that is a thing that you can obviously do with this card. There's a bunch of other things you can do with it, though.
Flicker it a bunch. The new Ormos Archive Keeper that we talked about in the Jumpstart set review is pretty fun here because you can discard 3 cards with different names and draw 5 cards. So you're just going to have more fuel in the... And it's also Sphinx Tribal, right?
And you can just dump the coolest things that you want to cast for free out there. Yeah. Unesh, Cryo Sphinx Sovereign, does a small factor fiction, so that puts things in your graveyard.
It's going to make the Scholar only cost 5 mana, too. You can cast the Scholar of the Lost Trove, and then cast a Torrential Gearhulk, and another spell off of that.
Torrential Gearhulk is very similar to Scholar of the Lost Trove. It's a 6 mana artifact with flash. When it ETBs, you may cast target instant card from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. I play this card in a lot of decks. It's so good.
Yeah.
And Scholar of Lost Trove doesn't have flash, but opens up 2 other card types, sorceries and artifacts, for 1 more mana. So you just know it's good.
Yeah, you can even cast Shroom the Hegemon off of this, which helps you get another artifact every graveyard. There's a whole deck here, right, that you're just basically able to recast things over and over again. And not to mention, you can cast any artifact. So let's talk about some very high-costed ones that are very powerful.
You put down a Chroma's Memorial.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Darksteel Forge.
Yeah, give everything indestructible. That's pretty good. Panharmonicon obviously goes along with Scholar of the Lost Trove because it doubles up your ETB effects.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing is that Scholar can get back the Panharmonicon for you if it's ever died, if it's ever gone to the graveyard.
Yep.
And once you're getting 2 things off Scholar of the Lost Trove when it comes in, then I think it's really easy at that point to kind of go infinite.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty easy anyway, but like with Court Clan Ironworks, you're sacking the artifacts, somehow blinking or recurring the Scholar and just going through the whole rigmarole of playing the same cards over and over out of your graveyard, which a lot of things do, but, and KCI is famous for it.
Yeah.
An interesting one is Aligned Hedron Network, which is 4 mana for an artifact. When it enters the battlefield, you exile all creatures with power 5 or greater until Aligned Hedron Network leaves the battlefield. So it'll exile the Scholar, then you sack the Aligned Hedron Network or get rid of it some way. Scholar comes back, brings back the Aligned Hedron Network, and
exiles
now you're...
Exiles it, sacks, and KCI is going to give you infinite mana.
Yeah, exactly. So...
Yeah. In the 99, I think a Braids Conjurer Adept deck will love this, because you're putting this out and you're getting the extra value off it. Sometimes people just put a big creature out and it's like, haha, deal with it. It's like, I'm going to do this and do this, and I'm just going to combo off right then and there.
And you might have big artifacts in your graveyard too, and the fact that it's ETB really makes it good for Braids.
Yeah. Now, this won't go in the 99 Duretti, but you want, if you want a blue-red artifact deck, a Duretti Scrap Savant card is very good for all the artifact synergies out there. Same with Yennette, Cryptic Sovereign. This even has the odd CMC.
Oh, 7 CMC.
Yeah, this might be the best Sphinx Commander, I think.
It's definitely the best Scholar of the Trove Commander, because if you could cast if you just flip this thing, right, you play it for free,
yeah,
and then you play something else for free out of your graveyard,
and then maybe play something else for free from that one card too, who knows.
Oh boy
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Yeah, Yarik, of course, because it's Panharmonicon on a commander.
Yep.
So yeah,
maybe I'll make a Yennette deck. That sounds about right. It's in the same color as Ascend Triplets, but is not nearly as absurd.
Yeah. I think that's
for
cool.
Other players to play against.
Yeah, so I think the Scholar is just very, very... It has raw power, and it's going to be fairly easy to break. So, yeah. Whatever. I don't know what else to say about it.
It's powerful. All right, next up, and the last card we're talking about blue here, is Archaeomender.
Archaeomender?
Not Manson. It's Menden. It's not Manson Lung Rider. It's Menden, Sheldon Mendery. Oh, boy.
All right.
We've been doing this for too long. Okay, it's 2 blue for a creature human wizard. When Archaeomender enters the battlefield, return target artifact card from your graveyard to your hand. Oh.
So it's Archaeomancer, but for an artifact in your graveyard.
And costs one less blue.
Yeah. This card has existed twice, actually, in white. So Treasure Hunter and Trusty Pack Beast are the exact same card, but in white. 2 white for a 2/2. When it comes into play, return target artifact card from your graveyard to your hand. Obviously, white, we know if you put it in your deck, it actively lowers your percent chance to win. So maybe we haven't seen Trusty Pack Beast and Treasure Hunter that often because it's in white, and maybe putting it in blue, which has a lot more artifact
synergies.
Maybe not more, but better, right? They tutor
Definitely
the
better,
artifacts.
Yeah.
And so I think this card should have been in red, is what I really think.
It does feel right for red, because red does care more about artifacts and blue cares about the instants and sorceries. But I'm also not a designer, so I don't know.
Well, why does blue get to tutor for the artifacts and regrow them out of the graveyard? I think that regrowing them out of the graveyard should be red's domain, and finding them in your library, in your head, should be blue's domain, and they shouldn't... Like, it's just weird to me that this is a blue card. Regardless, it's going to be useful in certain decks that have a lot of artifacts, right? Because, obviously, this kind of effect, we know, if you're a card that when you ETB, you get a certain card type out of your graveyard, that's going to be usable for decks with that card type.
Yeah, so I would just, again, look at the cards we talked about, Scholar of the Lost Trove, a lot of that there. So, how do we think blue fared in the two cards we talked about here?
I mean, Scholar of Lost Trove is just a very powerful card.
That's just a game ender a lot of times.
Yeah.
You will be able to combo off of that in a number of ways.
It's going to be a groany card, right? People are going to play that, and people are going to be like,
what now? And you're going to go, meh, 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 meh.
Is that a maniacal laugh? Or
Well, 5 things entering the graveyard to the battlefield because of all the effects
like
you're doing.
It sounded like an old move. Rah, 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 see?
Ah, tossing like the girl over your shoulder and playing them on the railroad tracks.
All right, let's move on to black. There's only one card we're going to talk about here. It's Witch of the Moors. 3 black for a 4/4 human warlock with death touch. At the beginning of your end step, if you gained life this turn, each opponent sacrifices a creature and you return up to 1 target creature card from your graveyard to your hand.
Oh.
So on your end step, it triggers. It does a lot of things.
Yeah.
It makes everybody sack a creature and you get one. It's Shieldred's.
Jeez. But at your end step, so you don't even need to wait again for your upkeep.
This seems like really good.
You just have to gain life, which isn't too hard in black. I mean, obviously the 99 of our obvious Ailey, Karlov, Aloro is absurd with this. But let's talk about some other cards here. One that I just love is Pristine Talisman. Mm-hmm. A 3-mana artifact, you tap it to add colorless, you gain a life. That's going to trigger this, and everyone's sacking a creature.
And you getting a creature back, so it's a huge swing. Also, the fact that it doesn't care if you've gained the life while it was on the battlefield. So even if
that's
you,
right,
it just says this turn. So even if you tap the Pristine Talisman to cast this card, it will still remember you gained life this turn.
Yep.
And you'll get the thing back. Bantu's Monument is a card where every time you cast a creature spell, it drains.
Yep.
And you gain one life.
Aristocrats.
So
boom.
Yep. You, Witch of Moors is a creature. So when you cast it, if Bantu's Monument is out, you'll gain that life.
Yeah.
And then it will trigger on the end step.
Yeah, I mean, I like this a lot. You are just going to be able to do a lot with this. It costs less than Shieldred. It's not hard to gain that life.
Shieldred's a sweet card, but it's so expensive.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, it, if it gets removed right away, it just feels so bad. Whereas five mana, just way, way more powerful. And the
Black already has their edicts. They already have their, you know, all of these cards that are going to make people sack creatures already. Witch of the Moors is like, if you're playing like a, against a Voltron deck and you cast Witch of the Moors and you gain some
life. You can never win.
Yeah, you're done for.
You can never beat that card. Yeah, really, really cool. There's a bunch of, I don't know, Timuret.
Yeah, I like Timuret a lot.
Oh my gosh, Aloro.
Yeah, let's not talk about Aloro.
Krav and Regna, Alenda, Vito, the new Vito has a lot of life gain. All those. I think if your deck touches black and, you know, most turns is going to be able to gain life, you'll play Witch of the Moors. It's a very good card.
Yeah, it's just five mana. I mean, not just five mana, but it is a lot of value for five mana. And Dictative Erebos is a card that probably is a lot more abusive than Witch of the Moors, but Witch of the Moors will still get the job done, certainly.
And you get a card back from your graveyard.
Like, I keep forgetting about that.
Yeah, you just get that value. So often you'll play it, and even if they destroy it when they untap, you've already killed one of each of their creatures and got a creature back. So
pretty good.
Yeah, you're still up even if they Swords to Plowshares.
Yeah, that's a 4-for-1 basically.
Yeah.
If you get everything, even if it's just a token, who cares? You're still getting a card back from your graveyard. So
yeah,
good job.
All right. So that's the only card from black. But how did black fare?
I mean, that's a great card.
It's
definitely doing something that black, we haven't seen like this effect for black cards as much, right?
Well, we've seen it, but not
edict
in this way.
Yeah. It's like something that's just going to continually happen if you're able to protect it. Pretty good.
Pretty good. I don't know what letter grade. Did we even give a letter grade to blue either?
Blue gets, let's give it a B+.
B+, and black gets like a B+.
Yeah.
It's only one card, but it's pretty good. All right. There's no colorless cards that we want to talk about.
Sorry. No multicolored cards either.
There's only one artifact that's new, and it's not very good, so we're going to skip it.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's go through what we think the most powerful card is. I know what my answer is.
It's going to be a mix between the green one and Scholar of the Lost Trove. Because I will probably build that Sphinx deck, I'm going to say Scholar. Because 7 mana, who cares? You'll find a way to cheat it out.
Okay, I'm going to say Allosaurus Shepherd, the green one. I just think that'll actually be like Heroic Intervention.
Yeah, just play it and you're like, oh no, all of these things.
I had plans. I have a counterspell in my hand, so I was feeling pretty good. I can stop whatever they were going to do, and I just need to untap. Like, that's a situation you're in quite a bit in Commander. Yeah. And they go, Allosaurus Shepherd. Crap.
Can't even counter that. Again, Prowling Serpent Port. I just looked at it when I was playing against Game Nuts and went, oh, that effect exists. Wasn't even in my brain space.
And your posture up to that moment and your thinking was, I can handle anything because I can counter it.
Yeah.
And exactly. So that effect is just very powerful. So, and it's one mana. It's one mana.
All right. Yeah. To the listen. Oh, wait.
Favorite new card. I know mine.
Let me think.
Can you tell I thought about this beforehand?
I did not think about this beforehand. I am going to say the red board wipe.
Oh, Immolating Gyre.
Immolating Gyre, yeah. Red just needs more board wipes. When I was building my Paco and Haldan deck and looking for cheap board wipes.
You're like, there aren't any. I'm going to say Living Lightning.
Ah, cool.
I really like getting instants and sorceries back into my hand.
Yeah,
so
there are a lot of combos with Living Lightning.
Even if you just, it just dies and you just get one back, it's fine. Like, either you didn't do combo-y stuff, that's just good value.
Yeah. Okay. Now to the listeners. What's your favorite card that we talked about in today's episode? Do you even think what we thought was the most powerful is the most powerful? Are there any cards in general on Jumpstart that jump out at you that we didn't even mention? Because there are a few new ones that we didn't talk about. And of course, what is the most busted combination of decks that you think you can make if you were to open a bunch, right?
Oh, the themes?
Yeah. What do you think is the absolute best combo? And I would love to see if people try this out with Two of the Giant or multiplayer rules, or maybe even make a cube out of it.
Oh, that seems like it'd be cool.
That's cool. So you can always play it over and over again. I like that a lot.
Is the cube like, you draft it like normal, or is
No. I think you just take two things randomly and then be like, oh, this is my deck for this time.
That's cool.
Have to have like a little deck list and stuff so you can separate them again.
All right. Well, if you want to get your hands on Jumpstart, you can pre-order it right now. You can order M21 stuff as well. And there's a bunch of cool cards and reprints that we know you want to get your hands on. Just go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone when you're ordering that stuff, because you really are simultaneously getting the cards that you're going to buy anyway, but also supporting all of our content, including this show and game nights. It really does help us out a lot.
Yeah, and you know what? If you do decide to make a cube, you're going to need to buy a lot of sleeves. And
oh, yeah,
those
a lot
sleeves
for a cube.
Need to be durable. They need to stand the test of time, and Josh and I trust Ultra Pro to do that for us. The Eclipse sleeves that they make are some of our favorites. A lot of my decks, I still have the same 40 cards, 40 sleeves for my limited decks. When I
your
drafting.
Draft set?
I have had them for 3 years now. All right, and they've gone a little dirty, but you can just scrape it off, and it's like, wow, they still hold up. No tears, nothing. So we really do trust Ultra Pro product. If you go and purchase Ultra Pro product off of cardgame.com/commandzone or for your local game store, you are also supporting our show.
You know, I have my Sriracha sleeves,
yeah,
which are using the Eclipse technology, so they're like the guild theme sleeves or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're glossy, so like you said, every once in a while you have to wipe them down, but they're so sturdy. Like,
yeah.
I've had those same sleeves for like 7 pre-releases. It's Jeez. Insane. They just have lasted forever.
Spicy.
Yeah. All right. Now it's time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic.
Not me. Not it.
Wait, I did it last time.
You did it last time?
Yeah, I did The Wire.
Oh, that's right. Have you guys heard about The Wire? Let's just do it again. Okay. Let's think here. What is something that I love? You know what? It's on Netflix now. Avatar: The Last Airbender has returned to Netflix.
Not the M. Night. Because that's also on Netflix.
Oh, gosh.
I think.
You know, there should be a rule where if you put one on, you have to get rid of the other.
Yeah.
Because
he's talking about the animated series.
Yes, the animated series, Nickelodeon series, 3 seasons. This is one of the best shows just ever created, in my opinion. Every episode, it doesn't matter how old you are, the humor, the style of the animation is high quality. All the characters are great, and they have a bunch of great messaging in there as well. And it's just a really fun adventure. It's about a world where there is a mythical being, a human person that's called the Avatar, that's able to master all 4 elements. They can firebend, waterbend, earthbend, and airbend, and they're there to restore peace to the world. But 100 years ago, he went missing, and the Fire Nation attacked the rest of the world and took over while the balance was unable to be controlled, and we start our adventure in the northern tribes of the Water Tribes as 2 young adventurers discover what they believe to be is the Avatar.
And then the Fire Nation attacked.
And then the Fire Nation just kept attacking, actually. They didn't
stop
attacking.
I'm going to make you really sad. I haven't watched the animated series, but I have watched the
M. No, stop. No. Reverse. Everyone click 20 seconds back and just
don't watch the live action movie.
Really
don't. Do it.
Really don't.
Just really don't.
I'm not even, like, sometimes I'm just like, yeah, just do it just to see it and see what happens. But
no,
in this case,
don't do it.
Don't.
And I really don't like criticizing movies and stuff because I know how hard they are to make, but that movie's really bad.
It is bad.
Okay, on that note, something that's not bad is our editing, graphics, and logistics team. These people are actually awesome. I'm talking, of course, about Ashlyn Rose, Craig Blanchett, Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Jake Boss, Josh Murphy, Alfred Estaca, and Sam Waldo. If you notice, we have a new montage ending the podcast.
Yeah.
That's all the animation. Not all of them. That's just a bunch of animations that Sam has done because we decided we could use those again. You know, a lot of them are probably never going to get...
Prowling
Super
Park.
It's in there. We'll probably see that on game nights at some point.
What do you think is your favorite of the ones in the new one at the end? Because I have a couple of favorites in there.
Well, tell me, what's your favorite?
I love the Willbender.
Yeah, it's the Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
I think I like Uro. He's
the
lightning
the whole
practice.
Screen
yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you guys listen to us for about another 20 seconds, you'll see that. But first, we have to special thanks out to Jeffrey Palmer, who provides the living card animations that live behind us here on set, and they begin the show and no longer end the show. Sorry, Jeffrey, we still got you at the beginning, but we had to give some love to Sam at the end. But go ahead and follow Jeffrey on Twitter at LivingCardsMTG.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
See you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.